case this morning, Edeki versus Gonzalez.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, my name is Holly Spurlock, and I represent Mensa Edekpe. Mr. Edekpe testified for nearly 4 hours about a decade of persecution he suffered in the country of Togo. He was tortured for his membership in a political opposition group, which has been well documented in country reports from the United States and various reports from human rights organizations. The IJ did not dispute his membership to the opposition party, the UFC. He presented his membership card, and he supported his testimony with documentation of his father-in-law's assassination, the country's oppression during election years and other times throughout President Ayatama's reign and now his son's reign. And he also supported his testimony with his fear of future prosecution based on letters from his family who continue to suffer because of their relationship to him.
The father-in-law's assassination was corroborated by one of the Amnesty International reports?
Yes.
And that was before the IJ, that particular report?
The particular report that said that the Captain Azote's 1996 assassination has not been resolved was not before. It was something we discovered later. The IJ erred, though, in two ways. She found inconsistencies and omissions that were not there based on unauthenticated, unreliable, and incomplete notes from an asylum officer interview that took place over the time period of 1 hour as opposed to 4 hours of testimony that was in a question-answer format as opposed to a direct examination, which is an opportunity to give a narrative of a story, and which was done through a translator that was an amateur French translator not focused on Togolese French within 1 year of his arrival to the United States. It was also based on an application that consists of 2 pages as opposed to an affidavit that consisted of 10. The 2 pages were written in English, although Mr. Odekvi's language is a Togolese dialect of French. The second error that the judge made was to fail to consider corroborating evidence such as undisputed expert testimony, country reports, and letters from his family and his UFC card. She gave a mere 1 page to corroborating evidence in her multi-page opinion.
What was this that the judge said that she didn't, that the expert did not judge the credibility of the petitioner?
The expert, what he did was talk about the country conditions and then state that Mr. Dekpi's story, life story, was consistent with others that have suffered in the same similar way. And the IJ merely grouped the expert testimony with the country reports as evidence of the country situation without holding an unreasonable standard that this particular expert needs to be able to corroborate the personal experience of a particular applicant, which is never going to be possible to happen. The failure with regards to the heavily weight that was placed on the notes is due to the 2 processes I explained a minute ago, which were completely different, 4 hours versus 1 hour, 10 pages versus 3 pages, the translation situation, the question-answer format versus the narrative. In addition, the omissions and inconsistencies that the IJ has pointed out are non-existent. There's allegedly an omission about the elections, but those are located on page 242 of our supplemental appendix in the application and on 260 of the notes in which he cited that elections were one of the problems he faced after 1990. The hiding, which is what she says was not present in the application, was in the application when he said that he fled and he went to Notzi and took refuge, and Aflotozi and took refuge. Whether or not we want to decide, work semantics on refuge versus hiding, he was writing in the English language, and refuge and hiding are similar enough that there is not an omission. And the final omission is about the Secretary General friend, whether or not that appears in the application and the notes. It does not appear with the word Secretary General in the asylum interview notes, but it does say his friend got him a passport, and in his application he specifically states that he worked with the Secretary General. The alleged inconsistencies are between 12 and 13 members versus 20 members of a student group getting arrested, and this is solely based on the asylum notes. But the question that follows the asylum notes answer that says 12 to 13, Mr. Odekpe said the remaining members were arrested. He was never asked a total number of members, and that is not an inconsistency. Captain Azote's assassination and the inconsistency allegedly existing between walking and jogging and the situation of whether or not he was out walking or jogging is not an inconsistency that goes to the heart of the fear of Mr. Odekpe that his father-in-law was assassinated, that his wife is in Togo and still suffering due to the relationship to both him and that father-in-law. Not to mention that any misinterpretation based on translation between walking and jogging can be attributed to that kind of a misunderstanding. And the Captain Azzotti's political affiliation is the third inconsistency that the IJ alleges exists that does not. Throughout the application, even the asylum officer's notes and his testimony, Mr. Odekpe stated that Captain Azzotti supported, contrary to his own political beliefs, he was one of the rare Northerners who had a dialogue about democracy. He was one of the rare Northerners who publicly came out in favor of democracy, an opinion that is disfavored by the Yadama regime. These inconsistencies that the IJ alleges exist do not exist. The omissions do not exist. And they do not rise to the level of even the case cited by the IJ in which the inconsistencies were ones in which an applicant would switch tribes from the application to the testimony, or all of a sudden he was beaten where he wasn't beaten in the application and now at testimony he claims to have been beaten. The second error relates to the corroborating evidence. There's one page dedicated to corroborating evidence in the IJ's opinion, and there's one sentence dedicated to the country conditions. And this court, as well as others, have acknowledged that we can't expect that every applicant is going to be written in all the newspaper articles, and that country conditions and an expert's testimony about a country's conditions and the consistency with a particular applicant's life story is how we're supposed to determine whether or not a particular applicant might have fear of future persecution. In addition, Mr. Odekpe presented letters, numerous letters, from his wife, his mother-in-law, his mother, and his sibling, all of which describe a current state of suffering and a current state of violence and danger that they live under. His daughter, a kidnapping was attempted on his daughter. They have been forced to flee their various towns throughout Togo since he's left, and inquiries about Mr. Odekpe's location haven't ceased. Now, those letters were dismissed and disregarded by the IJ because she said they do not describe the decade-long of persecution that he describes, and that standard is unreasonable. People would not write home, "Dear loved one, let me tell you what happened to you the last 10 years, and let me write it all out for you." And I would guess that an IJ might find that a bit contrived if they were presented with a letter that goes through item by item exactly what happened to them and how the testimony ends up coming in at the hearing. The letters in this case show future persecution and the continued movement that is required by his family and the continued threats, and including threats of violence and the continued violence against them. And those letters corroborate Mr. Odekpe's version of his story. They corroborate his life story and the dangers that he faced because of his membership to UFC. There are several undisputed facts here. Mr. Odekpe was a member of UFC. That's not been disputed. The country oppresses its political opposition. That has not been disputed. Mr. Odekpe also fears future persecution. As the IJ stated in her opinion, that the letters evidence that the family is still suffering and the family is fearful, to not then draw the conclusion that he is fearful to return to that family as opposed to being able to remove that family from the situation is not a reasonable conclusion and against substantial evidence.
You made a response to Judge Sykes, and that is the captain, the father-in-law. When was that verified? Subsequent to it, you said it wasn't in the country report, but it was
verified by us as a group of attorneys preparing for this appeal when we found out that there was some kind of a doubt on this Captain Azzotti. We continued to look for that information in providing it to the court, the BIA as well.
What was the timing of the Amnesty International report vis-a-vis the hearing and the IJ's decision?
I would have to look, Your Honor. I believe it was, though, before the hearing.
Okay.
It was 1999.
So Amnesty International essentially contemporaneously confirmed this extrajudicial killing.
Yes.
But it didn't find its way into the record before the IJ.
I don't believe it did.
How did it get into our record?
We provided a supplemental record.
And we allowed that, I guess?
I'm not.
To the immigration judge?
No, we provided a supplemental record with the Seventh Circuit appeal.
With stuff that wasn't in the record before the IJ?
That article and a follow-up letter that we had received.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Mandar?
May it please the court, Joseph Chandra Mazumdar for the respondent, the Attorney General of the United States. The issue here is credibility. The reason that we're here before you today is that Judge Gambastani found that the petitioner was not credible. In your review of the petition, as you know, the question for the court is whether or not the record compels finding that the petitioner was telling the truth. It does not. The court should deny the petition for review. The petitioner claims he's entitled to asylum based on membership in a particular social group and political opinion, contends he'll be arrested, tortured, with death possible, even if he returns to Togo. The issue's credibility and a review of the record reveals that it does not compel finding that the petitioner was telling the truth. The petitioner had the burden of persuading the agency that his evidence was credible. At all three levels of agency review, none of the adjudicators were persuaded. At the hearing, Judge Gambastani offered the petitioner, who was represented by counsel, an opportunity to amend or revise his application. He declined. He did, however, later at the hearing, acknowledge that he made an error about the length of time he was in custody in 1990. Judge Gambastani noted this in her decision. Judge Gambastani offered several specific, cogent examples from the record supporting her credibility determination. The petitioner was not credible. Judge Gambastani noted several inconsistencies between the petitioner's initial application and his testimony. These inconsistencies go to the heart of his claim. In his initial application, in the record at page 595, the petitioner stated, "My father-in-law, the Captain Azot, was a member of the UFC. He testified to the contrary." In the record at 195, he testified that his father-in-law only sympathized with the UFC. The petitioner also testified that his father-in-law, not openly, but was clandestinely involved with the UFC. That's in the record at 197 and 248. In his application, he stated that his father-in-law showed publicly his sympathy to an organization opposed to the government. In his initial application, the petitioner attributed his involvement in the UFC to his father-in-law. He did not do so in his testimony.
What I think is questionable here, to some extent at least, is the treatment of the letters and documents of the family, which the IJ says very little about, yet I don't think he seemed to examine them from a point of view of did they show what kind of danger this person would be in if he returned to Togo. They suggest to me, at least, that the family was under considerable scrutiny and in danger of being persecuted, and also that the authorities were looking very conscientiously to try to find the petitioner here to continue to persecute him if they could locate him. Now, the IJ just didn't look at those documents from that point of view or analyze them. What's your comment on that?
The IJ...
He brushed them off in one paragraph, as I recall.
The IJ looked at the corroborating evidence that the petitioner presented. However, as the IJ noted, those items did not specifically corroborate any of the petitioner's
claims. Well, shouldn't he looked at them from a little broader perspective than that?
In this case, Judge Gambastani found that the petitioner wasn't credible, and she looked to the corroborating evidence in order to bolster his credibility, and she found that the evidence didn't bolster his credibility. The IJ did not use the corroborating evidence the petitioner presented to discredit the petitioner's testimony. As to the letters, the letters from the petitioner's wife merely say that the situation that has made you leave has not ceased and has become worse. However, the letters give no indication of what that situation is, and we are left to rely on the...
Well, we're here to decide whether you ought to be sent back to Togo, and these letters certainly don't suggest that that would be very safe from his point of view, do they?
The letters don't... The judge based her decision on a credibility determination, and if the... She did not make a decision on the asylum claim on the merits. If the court determines that the Judge Gambastani's credibility determination can't be upheld, it's required to remand this case to the agency. The Judge Gambastani relied on several inconsistencies. The petitioner presented different dates in his initial application for his involvement in the UFC. In his application, he stated that he was involved in the UFC with his father-in-law in February of 1992. However, in an affidavit that was executed on the 20th of January 2004, and in his testimony, the petitioner states that he was involved in the UFC at an earlier time in 1991. There are more inconsistencies that the judge relied on, and she had inconsistencies relating to the father-in-law's alleged assassination. In his application, he stated that he was assassinated on January 27, 1996, and he testified to the contrary.
What was the contrary testimony?
The contrary testimony was that his father-in-law was killed on January 29, 1996, and he earlier in the hearing had testified.
What difference does it make whether it was 2 days later or not?
That's only one inconsistency that...
Well, there are a lot of the ones just like that where it's so minor as to be worthless. I mean, jogging or walking, does that make a difference?
It may not. But they're larger inconsistencies relating to the father-in-law's involvement in the UFC and the petitioner's own involvement in the UFC that are go to the heart of his claim and are material. For example, he testified that his father-in-law was killed after a phone call from the president of Togo. And that's in the record at 196 through 198, and that testimony is at odds with his initial application. and that suggests that the petitioner is bolstering his testimony in order to enhance his claim.
There was no mention of the call in his initial application?
There was not.
Well, is the initial asylum application expected to elaborate on every conceivable detail of the claim? The explanation that was offered was that he understood this application to be a summary only, and that he would not be precluded from offering additional details, or that the offering of additional details would not be held against him. If that were the rule, it seems to me you could always find inconsistencies.
You are correct. The judge, however, pointed to more than mere inconsistency, or more than omissions here. She pointed to substantial inconsistencies regarding the father-in-law's membership and the petitioner's membership in the UFC, as well as whether or not the petitioner was politically motivated in the killing.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.